From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey, for those people who have children who listen to this show, we know that you've got a big day coming up, and that's Halloween. Of course, that's the celebrating of all the ghouls and the goblins and the costumes and the trick-or-treating and all the candy. It's a big day for a lot of kids out there. And of course, we always have that question of how does that interplay with our Catholic faith, with it running right before All Souls and All Saints Day? And how can we look at this as Catholics? Well, we've got a new book out from author Anthony DeStefano, who wrote this book, All Hallows Eve, that kind of looks at that that interplay between those two things, the holy and the unholy, all in one children's book. And later in the show, we'll be talking about St. Gerard Majella. His feast day was just this past week, and celebrated in a big way on the East Coast in New Jersey. Dennis Tucci from the Guard of Honor, he's the coordinator there, who puts together that feast day celebration there. And St. Gerard is a patron of those people who are having difficult pregnancies and or are looking or having difficulty conceiving a child. There are many miracle stories attributed to him. So we'll be talking with Dennis Tucci about that that incredible saint and the national shrine that celebrates his memory. Let's take a look at the Might Be Saints later in the show. We'll be talking about Father Patrick Payton. And on my show on October 28th, there's a look at the charismatic priest who pioneered the use of radio and TV to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rosary rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in his singular mission. And I think that all of us who are on TV and radio, in the Catholic world anyway, have something, some debt of gratitude to pay for Father Patrick Payton for paving the way. So that's an episode of They Might Be Saints. You can check out theymightbesaints.com to see those episodes and when the new ones are coming out. You can also look at my series Explore with the Miracle Hunter on Saturday, October 25th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. I look at Assisi. The Italian city of Assisi gave rise to two of history's most celebrated saints. I look at the trail of St. Francis, the first to bear the stigmata, and St. Clair, his wonder-working follower. And so that'll be on Saturday, October 25th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day. For today, we've got Blessed Thaddeus McCarthy, who lived from 1455 to 1492, and you guessed it, Ireland. In the 365 Days with Mary project for today, October 25th, we've got the Mother of God of Filermos from in Montenegro in the year 1799. And question of the week is a really good one. I've never gotten this one before. Has any saint ever been cremated? I'll try to answer that one later in the show. And the miracle of the day is an apparition from Prague, Italy, in the year 1874 on today's date. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we look at the miracles and those things that relate to the into miracles that are happening in today's world. And this isn't really a miracle story, or it's something related to a miracle story, I suppose. But this was big news coming out of Turkey this past week, where headlines say ancient communion bread with Jesus' image were found in Turkey. And this image shows Jesus as a sower or a farmer, an agrarian motif that would have spoken directly to local communities. So archaeologists in Turkey's Karaman province have uncovered five carbonized loaves of bread from the Byzantine era, one stamped with an image of Jesus and a Greek inscription that reads, "With gratitude to the blessed Jesus." And the breads were found in ancient Ironopolis and dated to the 7th or 8th centuries AD. And what's interesting about this find is the iconography that instead of the familiar Pantocrator image that we see Jesus as a sower or a farmer. So that's an agrarian motif that would have spoken directly to the local communities, people who, in their faith and the labor, their lands were intertwined in that work and love of farming. And other loaves bear the Maltese cross and strengthen the case that these were used liturgically, likely as communion breads. And so how did this bread survive 1,300 years? And researchers point to a rare chain of events, intense heat, charred the loaves, then low oxygen burial and stable temperatures preserved the surface details, including the inscription and the stamped imagery. And the teams planned microscopy and tomography to identify grains and baking techniques, which could illuminate both the diet and worship in Middle Byzantine Anatolia. And the discovery lands in place that it's a foundational for Christians worldwide, and much of Turkey's home, Turkey was home to early Christian communities. From Paul's journey from across Asia Minor to seven churches named in those early sources in the key councils such as Nicaea that shaped the creeds recited even to this day. And, of course, Pope Leo will be visiting there next month. So this was an interesting find, this ancient communion bread with an image of Jesus found on it. There's nothing else like it in the world, as far as that I know. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And on this week's show, we're going to be talking about St. Gerard Majella and his devotion in New Jersey and the feast day that's celebrated there and around the world. But the question is, for today's show, where is St. Gerard Majella originally from? He's celebrated in New Jersey, but that that celebration comes from another country. What is the country where St. Gerard Majella was born? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com. And the fastest answer with the correct answer is going to win that prize. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Anthony DeStefano about his brand new children's book, All Hallows Eve, just in time for Halloween. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Well, people ask me this a lot. They say, do you get into, I know you talk about those supernatural things, the angels and the saints and Mary and all these visions and weeping statues and stigmata and all that other stuff. And they always ask, do you focus on any of the spookier stuff, you might say, the ghosts and the goblins and perhaps the influence of the devil? Do you ever talk about these things? And I look into these things and I say, well, yes, I know a little bit about them, but I always prefer to focus on the light rather than the dark. But we're coming up on the holiday that's All Hallows Eve or Halloween, in which we talk about some of these things, or at least secular culture does. Now, there's a brand new book that's it's a children's book that's come out. It's called All Hallows Eve, and it's by one of our favorite guests on this show, and that's Anthony DeStefano. And it's a brand new offering. He's a prolific author of numerous Catholic books, and we're so excited to have him back on the show today. Welcome back to the show, Anthony.
Thank you so much for having me. You're always kind.
And so this is an interesting book, right? Because for some people, Halloween's a little bit controversial, right? The idea of Catholics and Christians celebrating the ghouls and goblins and the focus on the devil that some people have. Why did you end up writing a book about Halloween?
Yes, I wrote it exactly for that very reason, because Halloween has been hijacked by the secular culture, and that's why it's controversial. Today, Halloween has become almost exclusively about costumes and candies and ghosts and goblins, and in many cases, unfortunately, an unhealthy fascination with evil. But Halloween is actually, much more than that. It comes from the great Catholic feast, as you just mentioned, of All Hallows Eve, which is the vigil of All Saints Day. And Christians have been celebrating this for centuries as a holy time to remember the saints in heaven and pray for the souls in purgatory. And unfortunately, many people have forgotten or abandoned that truth, and some people think that Halloween is anti-Christian, and that's just not the case. But by writing this story, I wanted to try to reclaim Halloween for what it truly is, a deeply spiritual time centered on prayer, penance, and the dead, remembrance of the dead. And I wanted to give kids and their parents, an engaging way to celebrate Halloween in line with their faith, But without losing the fun, the mystery, and even a little bit of the scary excitement that kids and adults naturally love about the season.
Absolutely. And how did you come up with this story idea?
Well, you know, I've been wanting to write a Halloween story for many, many years. This particular story is told through the eyes of a young girl who, along with her friends, they sneak into a cemetery one Halloween night, and they're just looking for some spooky thrills. But instead, they encounter this mysterious woman who tells them to be respectful to the dead, you know, to stop playing these games. And she also tells them a story about a naughty little girl who grew up to be a very selfish woman, but someone who repented at the end and before she died. And through this tale that she tells the kids, they learn about the reality of purgatory and the need to pray for the dead and the true meaning of Halloween. So I've always wanted to write a book that combines suspense and surprise and some scariness with a strong spiritual message. And so it's been, you know, ruminating for a long time. And I would say that you know, my biggest influences here, it sounds a little pretentious, but Shakespeare and Scooby-Doo. You know, Shakespeare, because I've always loved Hamlet and Macbeth, and Hamlet has a character of a ghost from purgatory. And that old show, Scooby-Doo, that some of us older people might remember, featured a group of young wannabe sleuths who were always involved in slightly scary situations, often in the cemeteries. And naturally, you know, I was influenced by my own background of writing for adults on subjects like heaven and hell and miracles.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Anthony DeStefano about his brand new book, All Hallows Eve. And as is consistent with all your books, Anthony, the illustrations are amazing. They're really engaging for people of all ages, but will be fun for kids especially. Tell us a little bit about Erwin Madrid, the illustrator of this book.
Yeah, he's an incredibly talented artist. He's got a long list of accomplishments. You know, he actually worked for DreamWorks Animation on films like Shrek and Madagascar, so he's like a real A player. And he's worked on a lot of best-selling books, including two of my own past books, A Travel Guide to Heaven for Kids and The Seed Who Was Afraid to Be Planted. And I wanted Erwin to illustrate this book because he has this rare gift for balancing realism with fantasy. His artwork captures both the spooky atmosphere that kids love about Halloween and the reverent beauty for Catholic teaching that we need so badly. So he uses dark and light colors and shadows in a way that I think can make children feel both the gravity of the subject matter and the joy of the gospel message. So he's able to convey these supernatural scenes and the story that the children hear with a richness and a depth, but also a lightheartedness, which I tried to put in the book. I tried to include a little humor in the story, and I think this artist captures both those qualities.
Yeah, no, they're really beautiful images included in the book. But I have to ask the question, it is a Halloween book, and of course the illustrator is appropriately illustrating, like you say, the light and the dark. Will children find either the illustrations or the stories too scary in this book?
I don't think so. Kids are, the kind of movies the kids are seeing these days and the kind of video games they're playing are way scarier than this little book, you know. I agree. My story has some eerie moments in it. I mean, look, it's set in a cemetery on Halloween night, and there's a couple of depictions of purgatory and hell, which are a little bit spooky, but I don't think they're terrifying. You know, I think of this more as a kind of a thrilling, true ghost story with a happy ending. And, you know, children and adults love to be thrilled. It's part of making our imaginations thrive and grow. That's why people love scary movies and they love roller coasters. You know, those kinds of things give us a feeling of exhilaration, but they do so in a way that, you know, a way that we can experience it in a safe, controlled way. And in a book like mine, you know, they get the added benefit of learning that good is stronger than evil. You know, that's why fairy tales have endured for centuries. You know, they teach moral lessons through wonder, suspense, and even fear. One of my favorite authors, G.K. Chesterton, said that the purpose of having dragons in fairy tales isn't to, you know, gratuitously frighten children. It's to show them that it's possible to slay those dragons if you're virtuous. So, you know, I think that this story balances all of that in a way that won't give children nightmares.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Anthony DeStefano about his brand new book, All Hallows Eve, available from Sophia Institute Press. And I think that, as you said, you're trying to reconnect people to the Catholic roots of Halloween, All Hallows Eve, the day before, the evening before All Saints Day, and Hallow meaning saint, I suppose. And so yes. Talk a little bit about how you, give a little boost to the parents, perhaps, with some little notes kind of buried inside in this book, the little catechism and Bible notes.
I didn't want to just write a book and put it out there because Halloween is controversial. And, I wanted parents to have confidence that what their children are reading here is firmly rooted in the Catholic faith, because Halloween can be confusing, even for adults. So I thought it was important, first of all, to get a bunch of endorsements from some leading cardinals and bishops and clergy, including a couple of exorcists there who have given endorsements to the book, because the book touches on hell and evil. And I wanted to spell out what the Church clearly teaches about purgatory, praying for the dead, the communion of saints. So I added some scriptural references, some citations from the Catechism. So I wanted to give these resources to families so that they could have further discussion. My hope is that parents won't just read the book to their children, but they'll talk to them about what it means using the Bible and the Catechism as references.
Wonderful. No, I think that's a great approach. As long as I've got you here, I'm going to ask you this kind of tricky question. Halloween, as we've been talking about, is kind of controversial, especially amongst Christians and Catholics. How do we celebrate it in the right way, or is it dangerous? Is there a wrong way to celebrate Halloween? Maybe the way the secular culture does, with all the costumes and candy and ghosts and goblins, should we be avoiding that sort of thing? What do you think?
This is a really, really good question, because parents, they're right to be cautious. Catholic parents are right to be cautious. The short answer is, look, costumes and candy, they're not bad in and of themselves. And I personally think that children should be allowed to enjoy some innocent fun, dressing up like a saint or a superhero or a princess or even something a little scary, which I'll talk about in a second. And then knocking on doors and sharing candy with the neighbors, that could be a wholesome community tradition. The danger comes in when Halloween becomes disconnected from its Christian meaning and starts celebrating things that are ugly and violent and even demonic. When we dress children in costumes that glorify gore or flirt with the occult, that's when we risk dulling their sensitivity to evil. And that's the first step to inviting evil into our lives. So that's where Halloween goes off track. We have to remember that the Church has never, being a Catholic doesn't mean that you check your brains at the door, okay? And so even dressing a kid, for example, in a skeleton or a ghost doesn't necessarily have to be bad, because it's reminding children of death. And if they understand that the right way, then those costumes can be a reminder that death is real, that Christ has conquered death. So the thing about the Christian Catholic take on Halloween is we take a balanced approach. Okay, we don't we make sure that we're not glorifying evil or trying to manipulate the spiritual world, but at the same time, we're not saying no to playful, innocent fun. So we're not afraid to having a little fun, but we want to be careful that we don't cross the line into inviting evil into our lives.
Absolutely. And I'll ask one more tricky question for you, Anthony. Talk a little bit about the benefit, we might say, of acknowledging the supernatural, of acknowledging the existence of some of these things that we don't necessarily want to focus on. But talk a little bit about acknowledging the supernatural as it leads us to consider and embrace those things that are good for our faith, those apparitions of Mary, perhaps, that you've talked about in other books, or other mystical phenomena related to the saints. Talk about the acknowledgement of these things and how it can actually lead us in the right direction.
Sure. Well, the first thing and the takeaway of this book is that it's important to pray for the dead. The dead may not go to straight to heaven. We canonize people who die all the time, and meanwhile they're in purgatory. The heart of this book is that you should pray for the dead, and children, if they learn about purgatory and the communion of saints and the fact that people don't really die after they die, but that there's another life beyond the grave, they'll realize maybe that they, as children, have power to help their grandparents who have passed on, for instance. So if a child finishes this book with a deeper sense of reverence for the dead and a habit of saying even a short prayer for kids on All Souls Day, then I think I've accomplished my goal here. Beyond that, though, you know, children are naturally curious about big questions like death and heaven and hell, and shielding them from those subjects, that doesn't always help. In fact, it confuses them more. You know, I mean, for instance, the topic of hell. You know, children see evil all the time in the news. They see shootings. They see, you know, attacks on countries. They know that evil exists, and it's important for them to know that there is final justice from God for those who embrace evil and do not repent. That's an important thing for children to learn. And it's so easy to talk about realities like heaven. You know, heaven is just God's home. It's a place where people go when they die. If they love God, they move from their home on earth to God's home. That's something they could understand. So these topics aren't so difficult if we try to explain them slowly.
Wonder. Very well put. And Anthony, I know you put a lot of work into this one. You got a great illustrator back working on this, and this is a fantastic book just in time for All Hallows Eve to celebrate that. What is your main hope for parents and specifically children who are going to look at your story?
You know, as I said, and I'll repeat this because it's so important, the heart of this book is through the haunting but hopeful tale that the main character teaches these children. I want children to see that their actions matter, not just in this life, but in eternity. I want them to know that they have power, even as little children, to help souls in purgatory through their prayers. That's an incredible privilege, and it's an incredible responsibility. So I want children to go away from this book and just decide to say one prayer for those people who have died on All Souls Day. If they do that, just that one prayer, all the children will read this book, that's going to get a lot of people into heaven. And that, believe me, that's tremendous reward for me as an author if I'm able to help some people get out of purgatory and into heaven just because we ask some children to pray for them.
There you go. That's a beautiful idea. And Anthony DeStefano, for those people who want to pick up your book, All Hallows Eve, from Sophie Institute Press, or find out more about you, what are the best places that people can go?
They can go to my website, www.anthonydestefano.com. I don't sell books there, but they could find out about all of my books, over 30 now. They can go to Sophia Institute Press directly, buy the book. The book is on Amazon. They keep selling out, but you will have the book before the holiday. Barnes & Noble, I always ask people also to patronize their local Catholic and Christian bookstores.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, as always, for joining us to share your latest creations, and we're so excited about this one, All Hallows Eve, from Sophia Institute Press. Thank you, Anthony DeStefano, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you for having me.
God bless. That was Anthony DeStefano with a brand new book, All Hallows Eve, of course, about Halloween and the Christian outlook on that. So I encourage people to pick that one up for their kids. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I got a really interesting question this past week from Diane. She writes in, "Dear Miracle Hunter, has any Catholic saint opted to be cremated? Thank you, Diane." It's a very interesting question, and I think it's especially interesting because we know that, according to current practice, cremation is allowed in the Catholic Church. And we also know that when it comes to saints, normally they're saving the bones and the body parts and everything else that can be saved as relics. So it seems unlikely, but here's what I'll tell you. So historically, the practice of cremation was strongly discouraged in the Church because of concerns over the doctrine of resurrection of the body and the dignity of the human body. In 1963, the Church permitted cremation in the Latin Rite under certain conditions, as long as it was not chosen to deny the Christian faith. And the current Code of Canon Law in 1983 states that the church earnestly recommends that the bodies of the deceased be buried. Nevertheless, the church does not prohibit cremation unless it has been chosen for reasons which are contrary to church teaching. And the key point is it's permitted, but burial of the body is the preferred norm, and cremation must respect human remains and the church's understanding of Christian hope. So many saints lived and died in eras when cremation was either unknown, extremely rare, or completely contrary to Christian practice. Some saints were cremated under forced martyrdom conditions. I think some martyrs were recorded as being burned alive, for example. But to be cremated, choosing cremation as a funeral preference, that is not something that we've really seen. So prior to the 20th century, the Christian custom almost universally was burial of the body, not cremation. And the emphasis on bodily resurrection made burial an important symbol and practice. And saints' causes have often involved the physical remains or relics of their bodies. A practice full of cremation, leaving only ashes, would complicate the veneration of bodily remains and relics. So thank you so much, Diane, for your question. So my answer is, I don't think there are any saints that have been cremated. I don't know. If anybody knows that answer, somebody who's voluntarily been cremated, let me know. But from my research, I can't find a single case of a saint who has been cremated. Thanks so much, Diane, for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. Each week, we talk about a Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different feast day or way to honor Mary on each and every day of the calendar year. And it might be a feast day, might be a famous miracle, it might be the building of a basilica, or other way of celebrating Mary on that day. But every day of the year has a different title of Mary. So for today's date, October 25th, we've got the Mother of God of Phalermos from Montenegro in the year 1799. And the story goes that the Madonna on Mount Phalermos, a Byzantine icon, may have been on Rhodes before the hospitallers arrived in 1306. And by 1396, it was an icon revered as wonder-working by both Latin Rite and Greeks. A magisterial bull of 1497 held that it had reached Rhodes miraculously on the waves in the time of Emperor Leo III. It was mentioned in the writings of many travelers and was taken to the city during the times of danger, considered by the knights as their most precious possession. It was already the center of a popular cult before they conquered the island, and the Rhodians piously venerated the Mother of God of Phalermos as a painting of St. Luke. And its fame as a wonder-working icon was known all over the Aegean. And that is the Mother of God of Phalermos from Montenegro in the year 1799. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can connect to the page 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book or download the free app on the iOS App Store, or you can go to the Facebook page and join any of 10,000 other followers who get a different devotion of Mary each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this each week where we talk about a miracle that's happened on the day's date in some year in Christian history. So on today's date, in the year 1874, we have an apparition of Our Lady Help of Christians, in Prague, in Italy. And so on October 25th, a 13-year-old and her friend Maria Valle Pagolo moved to a place that was known for an apparition, and they saw the Virgin Mary dressed in black, and they lowered their eyes and prayed. And after a while, they saw the Madonna, who wore a blue cape, surrounded by angels, with a shining star that stopped the mantle on his chest, and his hands folded in a cross. And there were two people on the sides. It was benign and friendly, and the girls questioned, and Mary answered their questions by saying that she was the Immaculate Conception. And the two people beside her were the saints Claire and Elizabeth, and the angels that have come to see if the two girls were innocent girls. And she explained that the star on her chest had been put there by her son to have been recognized as the Queen of Heaven and Earth, and that is The Apparition of Our Lady Help of Christians from Prague in Italy in the year 1874. For more information on the Might Be Saint of the Day, you can tune in each and every week where we're going to do a different title of Mary or other apparition or other miracle that happened exactly on the day's date. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week as well, where we talk about those people advancing down the pipeline, people moving along from servant of God to venerable to blessed and then to saint. And so the sainthood news for this week is that we have another beatification happening in Italy. And this happens on November 15th, 2025 in Bari. And a representative of the Holy Father, His Excellency Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, will be canonizing Carmelo de Palma, a diocesan priest who lived from 1876 to 1961, and he devoted all his energy to his ministry as a confessor and spiritual director, so much so that he was nicknamed the Hero of the Confessional. This gave him a profound understanding of the human soul and shaped his meekness, perseverance, and fatherly sense of belonging. And that is Carmelo de Palma, who will become a blessed on November 15th of this year in Bari in Italy. And that is the sainthood news for the day. And if we look at the might-be saint of the day, we've got somebody from Ireland, Blessed Thaddeus McCarthy, who lived from 1455 to 1492. And his feast day, his memorial, is today, October 25th. And he was born around the year 1455 in County Cork in Ireland, and he was the son of the Lord of Muskerry, grandson of the Lord of Kerry. And he was educated by the Franciscans at the University of Paris and at Rome. He was a priest, a bishop in Ireland in 1482. When he arrived in Ross, he found that Bishop Hugh O'Driscoll was still alive and holding the see. And because of the political intrigues of the time and the fact that people were not falsely reporting the bishop's death or sending an impostor to take his place, years of disputes broke out over the appointment, and Thaddeus never did assume his position. At one point, he was excommunicated by Pope Sixtus V, and had the excommunication confirmed by Pope Innocent VIII, and he was charged with fraud, and he was cleared of all charges, civil and ecclesiastic, and the excommunication was revoked. So he's the Bishop of Cork and Cloyne in Ireland in 1490. When he arrived, he found that locals had chosen Gerard Fitzgerald as bishop. And for political reasons, there were armed supporters in the cathedral to prevent Thaddeus from assuming control. Thaddeus appealed to the Pope, had his support, but without armed supporters, he traveled for a while as a pilgrim to holy sites. He died while on the road. The title White Martyr of Munster commemorates the mental and physical anguish he suffered while trying to do the church's work. And he died on October 25th, 1492, in a pilgrim's hostel in Italy of natural causes. And a Blessed Thaddeus McCarthy, with one more miracle, will go on to be named Saint Thaddeus McCarthy. What a complicated life. And that is today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And for those people who want to check out my series, They Might Be Saints, or read my book, They Might Be Saints, which is available from EWTNRC.com, about 24 Americans on the path to sainthood, you can pick that up at EWTNRC.com, or you can watch my show, They Might Be Saints, airing on October 28th. We have the episode on Father Patrick Peyton. It's a look at the charismatic priest who pioneered the use of radio and television to bring the rosary to the world, staging massive rallies and enlisting Hollywood celebrities in his singular mission. That's that They Might Be Saints this week with Father Patrick Peyton. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Dennis Tucci from the Guard of Honor, who celebrated the St. Gerard Majella feast day on this past week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We have many shrines around the United States, national shrines, in fact, and there are carryovers from Europe, and we have a a famous shrine in New Jersey that was just celebrated the feast day of its patron saint, St. Gerard Majella, this past week. And for those people who don't know this shrine or don't know St. Gerard Majella, we see that many pilgrims come to the shrine when they have trouble conceiving children or they're having difficult pregnancies. So he's a great intercessor for that. And just this past week, we see that they had a big feast day celebration at the National Shrine of St. Gerard Majella, just outside of Newark. Welcome to the program today, Dennis Tucci, the Guard of Honor Coordinator for the celebrations of St. Gerard Majella. Welcome to the show today, Dennis.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the show today, and I think that many Americans, maybe on the East Coast, he's better known, maybe amongst Italian Americans, he's better known, but who was the man, St. Gerard Majella?
Okay, St. Gerard was a lay brother, part of the Redemption Brothers that were formed in Italy, and St. Gerard, as a young child, was sickly, but he always wanted to be involved and be close to Jesus. So as he got older, his father passed away, and his father was a tailor, and he taught Gerard also to follow in the same line of work. But St. Gerard always wanted something more. So as he got a little older, he tried to get in some of the other religious organizations, and since he was really not a strong individual, a lot of them didn't think he could handle it. But fortunately, the Redemptions gave him a chance, and he became a Redemptress. So he walked all through Italy trying to help people, performing miracles, and was especially known for women who were having difficult time to conceive and those who were having difficult pregnancies. So that's how basically he got well known. Many miracles that were performed by St. Gerard. One in particular, what seems to have stuck, and I'll explain to you, is one time St. Gerard was visiting a family, and while he was there with the mother and father and some young children, he decided it was time to leave. And as he left, he forgot his handkerchief. So one of the young ladies ran to Brother Gerard and said, "Gerard, you left this." And he told her, "No, please keep it. One day you will need it." And as she got older and became pregnant, it looked like she was going to have a difficult pregnancy and may not make it through. And she remembered St. Gerard's handkerchief, and right away she sent her family to get it for her. And once she had the handkerchief, she had an easy pregnancy with no other problems. So that's one of the main people that know about him. At the shrine here, we have a handkerchief with St. Gerard's image that's actually placed onto the first-class relic we have of him. And we mail them out throughout the world, not just in the United States, but people know about St. Gerard. Thank you for your WTN program. We'll always usually put a program on about St. Gerard during the feast of October 16th. And that devotion came from the immigrants from Italy, from a small town called Cabocelli. So when they came here, like most of the other immigrants, they came with a saint, one of their favorite saints. And this particular immigration by the people from Cabocelli was St. Gerard. So they came to St. Lucie's, and they brought that devotion here. And that was in 1899, they decided to start a feast in honor of St. Gerard. And at that time, St. Gerard was not even a saint yet. So they still had a feast, 1899, and instead of taking out a statue of St. Gerard, they took a beautiful picture at St. Gerard through the streets here in the neighborhood, which was like Little Italy in Newark, New Jersey. I grew up here, and I would tell you it was just a beautiful thing with all the different restaurants and all the different people.
Wonderful. Could you describe the scene a little bit for those people who have never been to the feast day celebration? What is it like for someone who were to walk amongst the celebration there?
Well, this neighborhood has changed since I was young, so it's more of a minority type of a situation in the city of Newark here. So people come who grew up here, come back for the Feast of St. Gerard. So it's like a homecoming for everybody. We have all kinds of Italian delicacies outside the front of the church, all different kind of vendors. And one of the things we do that was started many years ago is we have a procession through the streets of the city of Newark. And the tradition of the Italian Americans was to put money on that statue, whoever their patron was, for two things: for thank St. Gerard for his intercession, or for asking for a favor from St. Gerard. So that devotion has carried even up until today. in any Italian-American feast that you go to, probably in the United States, you will see they still do that tradition. So we have a masses all through the feast this year, was from the 16th, which is St. Gerard's feast day, through the 19th. We have masses in Spanish, Italian, for the immigrants who still come by bus here from all over the state of New Jersey and New York. And then after that, we have a procession through the streets, and then we come back into church, and people come light candles, and we still have novenas and masses like that. So it's a beautiful time to focus on our faith and what God has given us, and thanksgiving for our intercession of St. Gerard.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Dennis Tucci, the Guard of Honor Coordinator for the Feast Day Celebrations of St. Gerard Majella outside Newark there in New Jersey. And how is the shrine there, the National Shrine, connected, or what's the association with St. Lucy's Church in Newark?
Okay, so when these immigrants came to this part of Newark, I guess the Archdiocese at the time decided that they needed to have somebody to minister to these Italian Americans. And that's how St. Lucy was formed in 1891. And the first, say, 40 years, we had a small church, a wooden church. And then in 1924, I believe, they built this beautiful church that's here. And then in 1975, through some of the devotees in St. Lucy's, they were able to talk to the Catholic bishops and to announce that St. Lucy's Church was going to be the National Shrine of St. Gerard. So that's how we attract many, many people. Thank God with social media. We had thousands of people here during the 16th, 19 days. And it's really been a blessing financially to our parish, which is, like I said, an inner-city parish. But the devotion to him and the Italian-Americans who first came here is continued by another group of young people, which I'm happy to say, who have taken over a lot of the responsibilities that I've had. And so that when I'm not here and people at my age are not here, they can still carry this beautiful tradition.
Wonderful. We've been talking today about St. Gerard Majella, some of his miracles, in the National Shrine of St. Gerard Majella in New Jersey. And for those people who visit the shrine, describe a little bit of what the shrine looks like. What would people see? What would they experience if they came to the shrine?
Well, they would probably think they're in Italy, to be honest with you. We have beautiful stained glass windows and beautiful ceiling paintings. I can't tell you how many people who come here who were just shocked that a church can still exist like this, especially in the city of Newark. So first of all, the structure of the church is just beautiful. We have a special chapel that's been built through the years for St. Gerard. But the most important thing about St. Lucy's is it's a very, very welcoming kind of parish, and you actually feel the presence of the Lord when you are here. And I would tell you that many, many people have told me that, and I've been here my whole life, so I would tell you it's a very special place. And anybody's welcome. We're open 7 days a week from like 7 in the morning to 6 at night. So we welcome anybody here. We have a first-class relic of St. Gerard, which is actually a piece of his bone. So it's a special place to visit. And I would tell you that definitely if you come to St. Lucy's, you'll feel something different, something very, very different, something special.
Wonderful. We've been talking today with Dennis Tucci, the Guard Coordinator for the Feast Day Celebrations of St. Gerard Majella, a saint from Italy. And you gave us a great history on St. Gerard. And when people who come, who have a great devotion, they're looking for trouble with conceiving a child or difficult pregnancies, what is it about St. Gerard, would you say, that people feel most connected to or most inspired by with this great saint?
Well, because of the word is results. We have many, many people. I would tell you we had about 400 people. One night of the novenas is dedicated for women who are trying to conceive. So they come, we give them a special blessing with the relic of St. Gerard. We give them one of those handkerchiefs that I talked to you about, which has novena prayers and a medal, St. Gerard, and that handkerchief, which is touched to his relic. So that's a very, very special, you know, special thing that people realize when they come here. But the results is that some people come here on that weeknight to have a special blessing, and next St. Gerard feast, they come with a baby. So I think people realize that if it's God's will and you pray to St. Gerard for his intercession, you're gonna have a child. So that's, I think, the reputation of St. Gerard is known all across the United States now, thanks to social media and you and people call us every day of the week looking for your handkerchief or some other information about St. Gerard. So I think results is the biggest reason. So
wonderful. And for those people, you mentioned this handkerchief. I imagine that there'll be some people listening to the show, and they might say, I'd like to write in or I'd like to call in to obtain one of these handkerchiefs from the National Shrine of St. Gerard. Is there a website or a Facebook page or an email or a phone number that you might recommend that people contact in order to obtain one of those handkerchiefs?
Okay. The first email is St. Lucy, STLUCYSNWK for Newark, at yahoo.com. That's our, and our phone number is 973-803-4200. And they could just tell us, and we will mail them a handkerchief, no matter where they are. So that handkerchief, again, is Touch the St. Gerard's First Class Relic.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dennis Tucci, the Guard Honor Coordinator for the Feast Day Celebrations of St. Gerard Majella. As we wrap up the interview today, leave us with one more word of inspiration, if you would. What is it about St. Gerard and his shrine that attracts so many people from the East Coast and around the world to honor this great saint?
Well, if you're having a difficult pregnancy, and I know nowadays doctors will tell you have to do this, you have to do that, or you can't even receive, I will ask you to trust St. Gerard and leave it to him. And like I said before, I firmly believe if it's God's will, then you will become pregnant. So we just have to take faith in God and one of his close friends and servants, St. Gerard, and it'll happen.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dennis Tucci from the Guard of Honor, for St. Gerard Majella there outside Newark in New Jersey. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program. God bless. That was Dennis Tucci with a great reflections on St. Gerard, some incredible miracle stories related to him and those people seeking pregnancy. And for people who want to order one of those handkerchiefs, or obtain one, I should say, from the National Shrine of St. Gerard, they can go to Lucy's NWK at yahoo.com. That's STLUCYSNWK at yahoo.com, or call 973-803-4200 in order to put in your request for one of those handkerchiefs from St. Gerard, Touch the Relic of St. Gerard. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Anthony DeStefano, the author of the new children's book, All Hallows' Eve, and also Dennis Tucci talking to us about St. Gerard Majella. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on Saturday, October 25th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. I go to the Italian city of Assisi, which gave rise to two of history's most celebrated saints. I follow the life of St. Francis, the first to bear the stigmata, and St. Clare, his wonder-working follower. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.